It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This week, we have Rob Wyatt, who makes his season debut on the Fighting Cock podcast. We review Villa and we warm it up with Harry Kane. Mason muscles in and we ponder, is Levy all about the money, money, money? I can't believe we just did that. We also preview Asteras and Stoke at home and Windy talks youth. That's youth not just in the halftime, but actually talks a little bit more about the youth. Enjoy the show.
It's the Fighting.
It's episode 14, season 4 of the Fighting Cock podcast. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Good evening.
How's everyone doing? Better than we was the last week, I bet.
Yep.
Yeah, good.
Rick, you haven't been here for a few weeks.
No.
Washing machine still all right?
Yeah, everything's good, mate.
No worries about
it. No, I fixed the shit out of everything.
You've had no actual home domestic, you know,
Appliances are going down now. I just lay on my sofa and chill now. nothing to worry about.
You've done your duties as a man pretty much for a year. You've got some tokens for your missus to pay in with, surely. Good shit to come.
Yeah.
Does she do that for you? Or?
Nah. It doesn't work on appliances.
What does it work on?
Washing up.
Oh, right, yeah.
Stuff like that. Stuff that I won't do. She knows me too well.
You don't wash up?
No.
Think it's a woman's role?
No. My principles are, I do the DIY shit. I do stuff with my children, take them to the park and all that lot.
Yeah.
I do dinners.
You will not iron.
But I don't wash up. That's my thing. I don't wash up. And you can't make me wash up. What are you going to do?
Is that getting your hands wet? Is that a problem?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not that. I just don't like doing it. It's shit. I'm not going to do it. Make me do it.
Oh, I just want to do it, mate. I'm just asking questions. As is my role on this podcast. Rob, how you doing?
I'm good, mate. Yeah.
Back for the first time this season?
First time this season. And coincidentally, Brad Friedel was on Match of the Day 2 last night. And, I think there's a bit of a coincidence thing going on there, Flav.
What's that?
As I said to you before, you know, I feel like the Brad Friedel.
Yeah.
What is my role? Tell me.
To come in and spit good knowledge. As he did, he held his own, more than held his own. I thought he was really good.
What, Friedel?
Yeah, I like the way
you... Yeah, I thought he was great.
He was also... He said, "We constantly." He was like, "This is my..." And he's played for a lot of clubs. I think he's probably spent as much time with Spurs as any other. So he was at Liverpool for a while and Villa for a long while.
Blackburn.
But he's kind of been at a few clubs. He was one of them, like a lot of goalkeepers. People think his time's done. And like Jennings, actually, we thought his time was done and he was sold to Arsenal and clearly wasn't done. He was great. but he was fantastic. I loved the way he talked to Match of the Day about us. It made a lot of sense. Windy, you're back.
I'm back.
How are you?
I'm all right, thanks, yeah.
Everything all right?
Everything is good.
Nothing to report?
Had a bit of a cold last week, but I'm over it now.
All right, nothing to report. Okay, so we've got Block 35, a partisan Belgrade. So, again, I seem to start the Fighting Cock by apologising every week, but we did say that it wouldn't happen because we were under the assumption that Partizan were going to take their entire allocation. It turned out last week that wasn't the case. Club contacted us and thought, why not? It was the same deal with Tripolis, and it was a fantastic 1882 experience. So we're going to do it again. This would be slightly different because you know how passionate their fans are, bordering on psychotic. So we've got to compete with that. But I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I don't know. They're as intimidating a fan base as you can possibly have.
Yeah.
1882 isn't that intimidating, granted. I mean, but, you know, we're going to hold our own and give it a go and see if we can't make a bit of noise in response. It's better than just sitting there for 90 minutes and listening to them just shit all over it.
It worked well with the Brighton game last week because their fans were quite vocal and it brought out the best in our fans, I thought. I mean, your perspective's a bit skewed when you're sat in amongst it, but Block 34 was quite loud, I thought, and we did a good job of supporting the team even when they weren't playing well in patches. I thought we did a good job.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go to the game and I was a bit concerned based on the fact that the Block sold out very quickly and you knew that there would be, we talked about it previously, but there would be some, well, many people in there that weren't aware of what 1882 is probably. But how did it go?
No, I think there was, like you speculated, there was people that weren't aware of or didn't book thinking, I'm booking the 1882 Block, but they joined in and it felt like the whole Block was singing.
Oh, really?
And the Spurs youth Block were brilliant in good voice, as usual.
Fantastic.
Loads of good songs, even through half-time. So, yeah, it was a good experience.
All right, fantastic. Yeah, so Block 35, Partizan Belgrade. Games on the 27th of November. Tickets are £25, as usual. There's also been another brilliant poster designed by Pixel Chap, who sorts out our posters for these games.
So good.
It's fantastic. We've got four in total. We've done one of them, the least good out of the four, but yeah, have a look. We're going to release another high res version for you to download and print if that's what you want to do. A few people are asking about that, so that'll go up on the website shortly. Yeah, thanks a lot for that. If you follow him at Pixel Chap, PIXEL Chap, CHAP, and if you need some graphic design work done, then why not employ him to do it? Be a good thing. Also, we've had a good response to people sending in photographs to use on the website. I met him. Khan is a lovely, lovely guy. He's a great photographer as well. And we've got some of his photography from the Villa game. A particularly good one of Kane's celebration with the rest of the team. And this is a great shot of because he's in, within the crowd, and he's managed to get this shot, and he must have got on his seat, but all the fists being pumped in focus, and in the background out of focus are all the Spurs players celebrating. Great shot, really. I mean, it's better than any press shot that I've seen. So.
Yeah, it is. It's a great shot.
It's fantastic. So thanks for that. And anybody else who does take pictures, even with their iPhone, at football, then just send them over. We'll credit you. There's a little way we credit on each picture being used. So, yeah, send them in. Or you can email them, editor@thefightingcop.co.uk or Twitter, love the shirt. All right. Engineer asked me to mention Thunderfall once again. Right, the idea is that he's basically in a situation where he's got to find a way to finance the rest of his acting course. And it will be explained when you see the video. As this podcast comes out, it'll probably be up on the front of the Fighting Cock, thefightingcock.co.uk. And he's just, you know, he needs to find a way to fund his course. And he's putting himself open to the idea that people can perhaps donate some money in order for him to carry on doing that. He needs to raise a lot of money, and he is brilliant at what he does. He's great at what he does on the Fighting Cock in terms of the music. The remixes you hear at the end of each podcast are all down to him. And in fact, any of the kind of decent audio stuff, the music and jingles and stuff, is all down to him. So if you can find it in your heart to support him, then please do. And it's a little known fact, but he has Yids tattooed on the inside of his lip. So if that ain't worth a fiver, I don't know what is. There's only one other person I've seen with Yids tattooed on the inside of the lip, and that's my other brother, Ryan. So, yeah. So if you want to fund a Yid and help him through at drama school, then check out the hashtag Fundafool, FUNDAFOOL. Also, quickly, before we go on to the Villa game, Al, who's been on the podcast, Alex, not Engineer Al, he got married yesterday. So 50s round of applause. Yeah, he got married, and I want to say congratulations and hope it goes better than most marriages.
And I love that he said during his groom speech, the winner went in yesterday's game. So he celebrated Harry Kane's goal mid-speech, which is something.
How did he know that?
They had Sky Go on a mobile on the table, the top table, which is awesome.
That's incredible that his missus allowed that, because it's her big day, isn't it?
Her dad's a Spurs fan as well, I gather.
Fantastic. There you go. That's why it all fits.
Good stock.
Sounds like a good marriage.
It does.
Okay, so let's talk about Villa. What do you guys think?
Shit.
Shut up, you mug. Shit?
Yeah, we played shit. In large amounts of the game. And if it wasn't for the last 10 minutes... to save us,
or to send them off beforehand, probably.
Yeah, but
I think we played. I think shit is really harsh. I don't think we played great, and in times we defended poorly. But there were opportunities to win that game comfortably. I thought with Adebayor going through, quite dangerous on the break in the first half.
Yeah,
I think the biggest issue for me, what was really shit, was Poch's selection of. Ensuring a kind of defensive unit down that left-hand side in Eriksen and Rose. Eriksen is probably the least capable defensive midfielder we have.
Attacking-minded.
Attacking-minded midfielder who's asked to do defensive duties. And Lamella are equally bad, actually. He doesn't seem to... Eriksen, and I love him. He hasn't had a great season. I think he's struggling in this system. But defensively, yesterday... He was terrible, I thought.
I think the Danish manager was spot on about Eriksen. I know it's going over old ground, but yeah. I really do. I think I think Pochettino has to come out and defend the guy. But for me, he hasn't come on at all this season.
What did the Danish manager say?
Danish manager basically said that he hasn't developed as a player. When he was at Ajax, he looked like he was going to kick on and do something. And for a player of his ability, I'm paraphrasing. I don't speak Danish, but for a player of his ability, he felt that this season he looks a bit lazy, and I think he looks lazy. I think he looks slightly unfit, if I'm being harsh.
I think he looks a little bit lost in the middle of the pitch. I think he just doesn't know what he's supposed to be doing.
Mm.
Like, I don't know whether kind of, for me, the position that he plays centrally, it's kind of like he's not like for like taking over the Modric role, but the ball should be going through him. He's like our most creative central player, and he should be the one dictating the tempo and putting the passes together. And
but he can't from where he's being played. You can't. You can't expect it. If Modric played in the centre of midfield,
yeah,
that's not what Eriksen's doing. He doesn't even play the centre of the front three. You usually play on the left. I know he interchanges with Lamella and whoever's playing number 10. Actually, there doesn't seem to be a static position. Now players seem to be quite dynamic in the way they cross over, and Chadli sometimes is found on the left. And I like that if it works well. But if it doesn't work well, it looks a little bit like we're all a bit at sea, and we don't understand what Pochettino's been asking them to do. But just to quickly go back to Eriksen, there was times when Rose, as both fullbacks are being asked to do, is go forward and create the width. And Eriksen was just... I mean, you've got essentially Eriksen having to fill in for Rose if the overlapping takes place. And in that instance, there was times when he was taking up a defensive position for the sake of it, not with any real intention that you were going to win the ball back. I don't know, I was frustrated. What do you think about that, Windy?
Well, I suppose Eriksen is probably getting a lot of criticism because he was taken off at half-time, and so, I don't know, in a way, he was... The finger was pointed at him in terms of things falling down defensively, but I think Soldado and Chadli didn't help particularly either defensively. Those three rotated pretty much throughout the game. They didn't have set positions as such. Soldado popped up on the right, Eriksen popped up on the right, Chadli would be on the left 1 minute, then behind the striker the next. So they all had that kind of freedom, and it was noticeable that Villa's fullbacks got lots of space. I mean, Lautan put in a really dangerous cross inside about 5 minutes. That was kind of the warning shot. And then Sissoko's ended up with something like three key passes, which is basically chance creation.
Yeah.
And Sissoko's a very, very poor fullback, and he's putting in crosses from the left, which are causing us untold problems because Norton's got no protection. Not that I think Norton had a particularly good game, so I didn't think he played well, but he had no protection once again. And I don't think Capu's form is helping, because ideally we'd have two deep-line midfielders who were covering those fullback areas as well. And I think Mason, you can kind of forgive him in a way because he's inexperienced, he's not really a defensive-minded player. Capu's job is to basically sit in front of the back four and protect, and that means knowing where to be and when to be there. And I don't think he's... At the moment, I don't think he's performing well enough to do that.
Do you think it's time for Stambouli to come in?
Yeah, I do. I think Stambouli played really well against Brighton, and I think he's played well in a couple of other showings. He's sort of slowly getting up to speed with the pace of the sort of English game, and I thought this was a good time to bring him in. The other selection change that I'd have made was Fazio for Kabul. I thought Kabul... I mean, his first 10 minutes was hopeless, and he said in commentary that Alan Smith was laying into him a bit. As an ex-Goonie, you'd kind of expect that, but Kabul was completely at sea. He sort of didn't know what to do to stop Benteke, and Benteke ended up winning something like 60% of his duels with Kabul, which isn't really acceptable because it should be easier for the defender to defend when he's facing the ball, whereas Benteke's got his back to it.
I think Kabul's general play is okay. It's decent. It's just there's key moments where he seems to lose his head. And he's positioning for that cross where... it was an amazing cross, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And to be fair to Kabul, this is the one where Benteke did a diving header and it went wide. I think that was very early on. And Kabul missed it by an inch. But it's those inches that cost you goals. That sounds like a horrible cliche, but it's true.
Yeah.
And he has to get that position right. I mean, it's why he's paid the money he is. That's why he's considered a top defender, or at least plays for a top team in England. And you'd expect him to get most of those right. And as you said, he lost most of the duels to Benteke, who, even unfit and had no match practice, looked so dangerous.
I really love him.
I think he'd be so good at Spurs. I mean, that shot when, again, it was down to... Vertonghen didn't get much stick. Actually, and that shot that he hit the post with, Vertonghen was completely out of position.
Nowhere.
He was so deep for that cross and for the goal. He was backing off. He was unwilling to commit to the challenge. And granted, they might have got a penalty, but they scored a goal. Rose, who's fought what it was for the goal, because hit that challenge where he kind of pushed it into space for is it Lauten? Yeah. It was Ndombele.
And then Wyman made the run, didn't he?
He made the run behind
Capu.
And Vertonghen has to hold his hands up there. But I kind of don't want to spend the next 10 minutes criticising and just
Yeah, well,
I mean, there was so much glory in that game.
What I was going to say was, despite not playing that well, I think it was a game of perspectives, really, because we could have been 2 or 3 nil up at half-time. I mean, that we had Soldado's header at the back post, which a player on form scores that goal. Cabal, all he had to do was kick the ball straight and hard, and he scores a goal. He's miskicked it right in front of goal. Yeah. Adebayor had a fantastic gilt edge chance. Why has he gone across the keeper from there? Just bend it into the near post, and you've got yourself a goal, which he really needs at the moment because he's so low on confidence and form. But it was kind of, I don't know, it felt like everything was going wrong, and then Harry Kane came on. Yeah. Cheered everyone up.
Before we go on to Kane, because I think we're going to end the segment on Kane, because
build it up.
I love that little man so much. let's talk about the sending off, because it was a quite contentious one. I don't think he should have been sent off. I know by the letter of the law he should have been.
No, that's wrong.
No?
This is something that's perpetuated by Jamie Redknapp. There's no rules about raising your hands. It's all down to referee's interpretation, basically. There's violent conduct, which is essentially... I wrote down the definition somewhere, bear with me a second. So it's using excessive force or brutality against the opponent when not challenging for the ball. Now, if that is excessive force or brutality, then, you know...
That's ridiculous.
I don't know. It's silly. He was pushing... Mason was a bit naughty. Mason was winding him up, put his head into Benteke's. Benteke's pushed his head away.
Well, he shoulder-barred him behind. Did you see that?
Yeah.
So that was the main reason I think they were calling. I don't think it was a headbutt there, but... Go on.
But since the start of the season, since the start of time, actually, that's what we've been crying out for. Somebody just to hit somebody. I mean, again...
Needle.
Going into cliche land, but it is. You know, you saw the Newcastle game last week. There was nothing. There was no passion. There was no commitment. And at least it was nice to see that, you know, that somebody, either they cared enough to push somebody in the back or that they were wound up about it.
Well, Mason as well, not for the first time this season, has been getting in people's faces, has been ferocious in the tackle sometimes. And it does feel like, and it's bizarre that a 23-year-old, almost unknown other than to people like you, Wendy, you know, to come in and to have that, give that steel that we've been crying out for. And I know, like, I don't, you know, you just said we've got no passion, no desire. I kind of, that sort of stuff rankles a little bit with me, because I think that it's kind of an easy thing to throw at the players. But then you look at Mason, you think that's exactly what you want. And it is passion and desire.
Kane, and they highlighted it on Match of the Day 2 last night. He was on the field for 5 minutes. His first three touches resulted in the opposition having to do something positive.
Yeah.
Whereas Adebayor and Soldado, much as I support the guys, there's whole matches go by where their keeper, White Hart Lane, you know, there's been game after game where we haven't created a proper chance.
So, you know, it's just players that grab the game by the scruff of the neck. And even if they fail, it doesn't matter too much. I think that's why a lot of support for Kane has come about, because he's willing to try. He's willing to make mistakes. He's willing to get the goalkeeper's jersey. He's willing to grab the ball off of Lamella.
Mason's got us some bollocks going up to Benteke and giving him a little nudge as well.
Just before we move on from that, right, I put a tweet out saying how much of a cunt I thought Lamella was for
waving the red card.
Like, I hate that. I especially hate it when you see it at other clubs, because it's not your own players. But when you see one of your own players, you think that's not the way Spurs should be behaving. And I think Harry Kane actually went up to him and stopped him.
He did.
Stopped him.
Oh, really?
So, you know, you don't understand. You don't. So you're in Italy, it's normal in Italy. Probably normal in Argentina, not here, not at Spurs. But that someone came back to me and was arguing that actually Mason was showed as much unsporting behaviour as Lamella did. But in my opinion, you've got one person acting like trying to think of something that I can use that isn't going to offend loads of people. Just a pussy hole, basically. and Mason, it was more. Shit, I'm going.
It felt like I think the thing. Mason, it felt like Mason was standing up for Lamella because Benteke had a swipe at him, hadn't he? And then Mason sort of charged in and sort of was pushing at Benteke and trying to wind him up. He's like, "Well, if you're going to have a go at my mate, then you can take me on as well."
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, he doesn't come away from that smelling of roses, but like Rob said, it's kind of what we've needed a bit in recent weeks.
And it does for me. It reeks of roses.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. If you're having a player going in and winding them up and giving you an advantage, then there's no. And it's, this is the way football's been played for years, and it's worse. You see much less of it now in your dad's day.
Yeah.
Barging goalkeepers into nets. I mean, you know, and hacking and you saw that the final between Chelsea and Leeds. I don't know if you've ever seen the footage of that. I think it's 70. So it was one Bremner and Chopper Harrison. It was like, it was disgusting. The tackles that were going in, I don't think there was a yellow card. It was ridiculous. And that was the way the game was. I'm not saying we should go back to that, but there's nothing wrong with a little bit of that in the game. And you know, you see people complain about players diving over in the box and going down at the touch.
Yeah.
Well, the antithesis of that is what Mason did. So there's a middle ground somewhere, and until people stop going down like pansies, a little bit of Mason nudging Benteke in the back. It's not a big bloke, he can handle it, do you know what I mean? He dealt with it in his own way, and probably Mason deserved a push in the face. Benteke didn't deserve to get sent off. He was sent off, and then you saw what happened.
You got fucked up!
People, the biggest expression that I've heard on Twitter is papering over cracks. I've seen about a million people say it.
On Twitter yesterday, like, we just scored like a last minute winner, and I was, you know, euphoric. I was fucking going mental. I mean, I was like checking Twitter to see the comments to put a smile on my face, and it's like the first couple, it's just like, oh yeah, papering over the cracks. It's like we've just scored in the last minute, man. We didn't deserve it. It's funny. This is brilliant. Like, just fucking enjoy it
for a second.
You support a team and you pay fucking ridiculous money. You get your pants pulled down left, right and centre. These are the moments that you should just love and cherish and just go with it, man. Just let yourself go. Don't worry about it. We can talk about papering over the cracks and shit like that tomorrow, the next day, whenever. Just fucking enjoy it,
that moment, because that's rare.
Oh, man.
I always listen to the last podcast as I'm walking down to record this one, right? They get me in the mood. And I was talking about moments of glory, and I said the exact same thing about Newcastle, how good it must have been for Newcastle fans. But they didn't score in the last minute, so how good it was for me just watching it at home. But the fans that were there, who went absolutely ballistic. It was fantastic. And it's those moments. That's what football's about. That's what keeps you going, in the hope that you're there to experience that. And just your first reaction to Harry Kane, local boy done good, scoring in the last minute at a time when we desperately need a win, to just go on Twitter and say, papered over the cracks, that did. Why are you following football? What do you get from football? If you can't find glory in that.
Yeah, that's... Nah. If you can't find glory in that, then fuck me.
Go home.
Seriously.
Just give up. You're not going to enjoy it. Because I don't know what you're going to enjoy if that ain't it.
To bring it down to a kind of realistic level as well, like, what if you're finger-pointing at cracks at this point, you're not giving the manager a chance. Seriously, he's had a few weeks.
When is there going to be any other time where there's going to be cracks to be papered over in the first 3 months of a manager's reign?
Exactly. I mean,
if there were no cracks, it would be insane.
Give the man a chance. It's ridiculous. I feel so sorry for Pochettino. The amount of crap he's had to put up with in the press in the last week or two, and from our own fans as well, and the boos last week against Newcastle. You know, it's not nice losing at home, and I understand people's frustration, but I don't think booing the manager at this point, or booing players as well, which has happened, I don't think it's appropriate. It's not going to help the situation.
The thing is, well, you know, apart from obviously the last minute winner, it's just... The thing that plays over in my head, because I, you know, I love Tottenham, and I've got other mates that support other teams and media and stuff. You know, people's fingers are hovering over the send or the enter. Spurs slump to another or gutted. Where's your Tottenham now and all that lot. And then that fucking moment is just like, up all of you, all of you, fuck off. And like, I just, oh man. I live for those moments.
See, I decided to sacrifice myself yesterday. I didn't watch the game because I was still getting over Newcastle. I went to the Brighton game, actually, which I enjoyed, funny enough. And so I sort of watched it on Twitter and various other things. Just, it was a bit of penance, basically. It was the only way that I thought I'd get through it. So I had that going. Now, I think there should be something on Twitter where you should be limited the number of tweets you've got or something. Or
during a game. That's
like
a great idea.
When I was a kid, there was a kid's story, Chicken Licking. You know, Chicken Licking, where the chicken thinks the fucking sky's falling and an acorn falls on his head.
Ah.
And he goes around and he gets all these people, and by the end of it, they think it's the end of the world. Twitter was like that up until about 89 minutes. And I can't understand how people can post that shit. Just think before you post.
Yeah.
Because it's going to come back and bite you in the arse, because football does that. And at the end, people, it must be the same people that are, you know, tweeting about papering over the fucking cracks. It just does my head in. So I'm not going to do that again.
Let's talk about, let's talk about Harry Kane then. Because, I mean, it's apt actually that you're here, Windy, and I'm here as well, because I was, as we said before, a massive critic. I just didn't think he was... I wasn't critical so much as I just didn't think he was good enough. And I was... he is clearly good enough. And you also said that on the very first episode of this season that Harry Kane would finish the season as Tottenham's first striker. And that hasn't happened yet, but...
No. He said... Windy said he wouldn't be surprised if he finished...
And what did we do?
We laughed.
Laughed in his face.
Yeah, we did.
We laughed with such... What's the incredulity?
Yeah.
What's the word?
I felt this big.
Credulity.
Incredulity. Incredulity.
I was saying incredulous. Basically, I was just laughing right at you, Windy, because I thought you was being ridiculous, silly. Actually, I just think you've been silly. But you're right. I mean, it could easily happen. And it's in part down to the poor form of our other strikers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But actually, more than that, it's his willingness to just get on the pitch and do something good.
I think he's paid you a compliment and then taking it straight back.
Incredulity.
He's saying this guy is going to be all right because the other two are so shit, basically.
Mm. I mean, the thing that strikes me with Kane is the thing that Friedel was saying about him last night in Match of the Day, that every day after training, every single training session, he's saying, Brad, can I take some shots at you? Can I take some free kicks at you?
That was fascinating.
This guy is a dedicated professional. He lives and breathes football. He's so enthusiastic, as we saw. He's just like, he's a kid at Christmas who's getting to play football for his favourite team. It's incredible.
I didn't know he was a Spurs fan.
I don't think he is. Was it Tim Grigg who said that his brother taught Harry Kane at school and he had like a Spurs bag and Spurs pencil case? I think it was Tim.
Really? Because I've heard other things. I don't want to repeat.
I've heard other things as well, but I'm told that Harry comes from a Spurs supporting family.
Do you know what? Yeah, he was Spurs.
Yeah.
His mum and dad's Spurs, brother's Spurs, granddad was Spurs. I think his great granddad. That's something to do with Bill Nicholson. I don't know if that's a true rumour. Similar to the rumours about Sterling.
Named after Harry Hotspur.
Harry Hotspur.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Whatever, it doesn't matter. He's one of our own now. Even if he wasn't grew up a Spurs fan. He's just seeing him play. And is it about the fact that his willingness to take this free kick on? It's the confidence of youth and going goal when Loris... You know, he was the first over to grab that jersey. And was he doing it for a laugh, or was he doing it because he actually thought he could contribute to something in goal? You want someone who is confident enough to go in there, not someone passing the shirt around going, oh, I don't want to do it, you do it. And the way he let the goal in kind of... And the reaction from the Spurs fans summed up that relationship. And, you know, the fact that he let that free kick in against Asteras... terribly.
And he was really annoyed with himself letting it in. It didn't matter, but he was really annoyed with himself letting it in as well. He actually cared.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of... we've got a lot of players at the moment who seem like they're going through the motions, like they're happy to turn up, pick up their paycheck, and what happens, happens. We've also got the likes of Ryan Mason and Harry Kane, who are really kind of enjoying their football. They're fighting for the shirt, they're doing everything they can. And whether it's because they're not established and they want to be established and want to be Premier League footballers, or whether they love Spurs and want to win a trophy of Spurs, it's kind of irrelevant. It's going to end up, it means to an end either way. And both of them have been absolutely superb whenever they pulled the shirt on in the last few weeks. And I think Mason is probably arguably first choice central midfielder now.
Yeah.
I mean, yesterday, Mason, his statistics were ridiculous. He came out with 87% pass completion, 23 passes completed in the final third, which is more than any other player on the pitch. He made more passes than anyone else. His defensive contribution was brilliant. 3 interceptions, 5 tackles, 3 clearances. He was everywhere. He was all over the place. Kane has scored 9 goals this season. I mean, that's a ridiculous contribution for a player who's not even had that much playing time. And I think the calls for Kane to start every game are fair. You know, he might not be a number 9
in
style.
How many games have we played in total this year? Was it
14 league, isn't it?
Yeah, must be near 20.
So, say just at this rate, Kane's easily going to get into double figures.
Yeah,
and you'd be surprised if he doesn't, given the start he's had.
He's got 9.
He's got 9.
So one more double figures.
Sorry. The fabled 20 goal a season is what was in my head. Oh, sorry, of course. I'm such an idiot. Yeah, no, he was fantastic, and Mason was especially good. But I think given it, players like him in his position don't generally get the plaudits. We see it as Spurs fans, but it's not something that's generally picked up by other. And when you talk about how good Mason is to fans of other teams, they don't. They're like, but he's crucial, and like you said, I think he probably is the first name on his team sheet. And to be fair, Pochettino's plucked him out of nowhere. Really, I know. Redknapp gave him a shot, but that was more of a forward. I mean, that's what he did in his youth career, didn't he?
He was a striker slash number 10, and he slowly moved backwards, which is the same with Modric. Modric started off as an attacking midfielder and moved backwards as well. And there's definite similarities between the two players and the way they want to play football.
Is Harry Kane a number 10 or a striker?
He's ideally a number 10, but he's been interviewed and said in interviews that he's happy to play wherever. And I think an on-form Harry Kane is a better number 9 than an off-form Soldado or Adebayor. And both of those two are really struggling at the moment.
He was amazing. Soldado was almost pitch perfect for his against
Brighton
and a lesser opposition. But I just thought he was fantastic.
He played well against Brighton.
Yeah. I thought he was brilliant.
He wasn't so good yesterday.
He didn't play
a single pass inside the penalty box yesterday, which I found a bit worrying because he had a lot of freedom, and Villa aren't exactly a form side. It just felt like Soldado just needs a couple of goals. He really does need a couple of goals, and the longer it goes on, it feels like he's not going to get them and it's never going to come right for him. But I think for the time being, if Eriksen and Lamela aren't going to be trusted, then I'm happy to see Soldado start up front with Kane in behind him.
Mm.
What do you do with players like Adebayor and Soldado that have got this experience, and then before then they've had, you know, got good scoring record, they can both do
with Adebayor,
an amount of things.
You take him out. That's what you do with Adebayor. You take him out. Soldado,
on play Soldado. Oh, fucking hell. Why didn't anyone think of that?
But with Soldado's a tricky one because he has come back into the team and he still isn't firing. But with Adebayor, and I said that he should start every game at the beginning of the season because he started quite well himself. But he's got to be dropped now.
Well, I think like with Poch, he knows both of them haven't got any confidence, and he started them both for either one of them to fucking get a goal or to do something to have a really good game and try and boost their confidence. And you know, yesterday neither of them covered themselves in glory, but. How long do you persist for? I mean, what happens now? Like, is Harry Kane going to start?
And I think he will.
Is he going to be like
that? I'd be amazed if he doesn't start.
Our main focal point is a striker.
I think what we'll see is against Asteras next week, we'll have. Is it next week?
This week.
Thursday.
Adebayor will start.
That's the way to get him back into form.
Yeah.
Play him against weaker opposition, try and get him to get his mojo back. Score a couple of goals, and also I think importantly play him in games where the support is going to be there for him, so the 1882 crowd will get behind him.
Mm.
It's felt like our fans have turned on Adebayor again, and it doesn't take much to turn Adebayor because of his history, but he's a player. I think Adebayor is quite a fragile character despite what people will tell you about him, and he needs an arm around the shoulder in Sherwood / Harry Redknapp style. Which isn't a great thing when you're paying someone big bucks. You don't need a fragile character leading the line. But having said that, Pochettino obviously sees something in his character, because otherwise he wouldn't have made him vice-captain and repeatedly picked him despite him playing really poorly.
He's actually destroyed two players by giving them captaincy duties, hasn't he? Like, yeah. Cabool,
the pressure's got to them.
The fact that Cabool has... He's not going to drop his club captain. Or can you do that?
He needs to drop him now.
Of course he needs to drop both.
Both of them, yeah. Difficult, isn't it? Who'd be a manager? I mean,
oh no, it's a nightmare, absolute nightmare. Well, actually, I'll
probably
would. I probably would actually give it a go. I'd literally last about 6 weeks. Anyway, there was a bit of a kind of resurgence of the Levy out stuff in the crowd against Aston Villa. I think when we went 1-0 down, there was reports of people chanting it. Many people chanting it. And it seemed like a substantial, or at least a meaningful, collection of people. And that's where you kind of it really becomes tangible, is when you start hearing it in the crowds, rather than on Twitter and stuff like that. So Just quickly, what's your kind of opinion of that? Do you not want to say?
Oh, it's difficult.
What
isn't
do you
it?
Think, Rob?
I think well, I've gone on record quite often as saying that I think if you've only got to look at the structure of the club and you know it's run by money people. That's what it's run by. And actually, for the club to invest enough money to get to the next level, it doesn't make any sense for them financially, because then you have to invest serious money. You have to be a Russian gangster or a, you know, somebody like that, or a, you have to have oil revenue behind you. And actually, I don't think Levy's going to do that with his money or Joe Louis, yeah, whichever one, yeah, their money. It just makes no sense for them to make that next jump. It's a bit like Ashley at Newcastle. You can sit there, you can draw £1-2 million from the club. You can make a very nice living. But actually, to do the next bit, which is, you know, when you start looking at the stadium, you've actually got to seriously, seriously invest for the long term. And I don't think, personally, this is my personal view, I don't think Levy is a football man enough to invest enough in that long term.
Do you think that... Because the attendances are dropping at Tottenham, even if it doesn't...
All over.
Yeah, all over. Yeah. But at Tottenham, you can see it, Newcastle with massive pockets. And I think that's the first time that I can remember for a long, long time that we haven't sold out, or at least it's visibly not, you know, there was pockets, like I said, pockets of people not that hadn't turned up for whatever reason. And I think that and you saw at Asteras, so the realistically, I was there and there was maybe 19,000, maybe 20,000 at top. And you think, is there a kind of disillusion? Are we becoming disillusioned as a fan base? And the reasons why that might be are down to Levy, you know, and the money he's, or Enoch, and the money they're charging us to get in there. And it does have to, you kind of look at Levy and you think, well, is he going to, he knows that we won't sell out that stadium. Is he going to spend 400 million buying, you know, getting it made, knowing full well that we won't sell the stadium out? And if we can't sell that stadium out, if the prices aren't reduced, and you'd have to reduce the prices to make that happen, then why build it? Why not just allow, create that foundation, make the club realistically maybe a 50, 100 million pound more valuable because that option is there, sell it, make the money and go. And that, if you, from his perspective, you think, oh, I couldn't blame him for that. But the kind of message from the club is always, we're going to build it and we're going to push on.
The last thing, which you sometimes have to bring back into the factor, is that he has, although he's a financial person, he does have emotional attachments to the club. Other members of his family are emotionally attached to the club, and there are people that are employed very close to him within the club. So you can't just say, fuck it, I'm going to take my money, I'm going to fuck off somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think he's almost caught between two stools. Mm. And that's one of the problems with the way the club is run at the moment.
And ultimately, it's Lewis. It's his decision. He holds all the power, yeah, doesn't he? It's not Enoch. I mean, Levy's an employee.
Well, Levy manages Enoch, which is the investment company, doesn't he? So I think Levy reports to Lewis, but I presume he has overall decision-making responsibility when it comes to the investment in Spurs. I presume that Levy's the one that commands.
No, of course, in terms of that, but in terms of selling the stake in the club. That's got to be down to Lewis.
I think the main puppeteer is Lewis, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, Levy's just Pinocchio, basically, or anyone else you want to talk about from Team America.
I mean, the thing that always comes back to me is be careful what you wish for, because whilst Levy has held us back in numerous ways, he's also driven us forward as a club in various ways as well. And I, like Flav says, I mean, the state of the stadium at the moment, it's not exactly half full, but the attendances are down. It's obvious they're down. And I think that's not helped by the fact that we've raised prices in the cup games from £20 to £25, which seemed to me utterly pointless. Seemed like a really... £20 seemed like a fair price for a cup game. It seemed like a good gesture on their part compared to a lot of clubs. Why raise that? And he's got to be very careful, because if attendances keep going down, there's going to be no point in him building these stadiums.
I genuinely think that he's missed the boat. The time to build the stadium was 2 years ago. Yeah. If he was able, I'm sure he would have done. And that time has passed. We've kind of gone over the hill in terms of popularity and watching live football, and he's missed the boat. We're already on a downward trajectory, and unless there's a massive upturn in performances on the pitch, which you can't really see unless someone like Gareth Bale or Modric comes out of what the current crop of players that we currently have, and that's very unlikely. And what essentially you've got is bit of a situation where you can't build the stadium. We're not selling out our current stadium. They're not going to put £400 million in, and that's that. You've missed the boat. It's done. In my opinion, that's it. And this is the kind of thing I've been waiting for, to be honest. I don't think building a new stadium was the answer to It's the answer to potentially competing with Arsenal and Chelsea, maybe. But ultimately, in order for fans to get the respect that they deserve and to be pay ticket prices that are reasonable, so that some fans are not being forced out of the club, then we need something like a reduction in the amount of people that are going to games in order to force chairman to recognise that. Last season, when we were paying £20 a game for the Europa League, as you said, the stadiums were full.
Mm.
The Dnipro was full. The only Europa League game I don't think was completely full was the first one we played, which was £25 when we qualified. And then the trust moved to the club and said, what are you doing? Why are you overcharging? Then they reduced it to 50, back to 20. I just think most people are getting fed up in football, not just at Tottenham, everywhere. Fed up with the amount of money you have to pay.
They are, but, you know, obviously Levy and fans want us to get back to the promised land of Champions League football and have that, you know, year in, year out. And once you do kind of get onto that ladder and you sustain it, then a stadium of 58,000, you will sell that out.
When are we ever going to get in the top four again?
Well, that's the thing. When you get to when we got to that stage, and so many people, you know, the season ticket list must have gone up, membership, everything, and you could tell what would happen if we were to make that jump. And the thing is, they thought that by getting AVB or whoever in that and spending that money, that's what was going to get us back to that next level, and we were going to be consistently getting top four, and we haven't done that. And that's when the stadium plans
then the real world happened.
It does, but then again, you've got to think that in the back of their mind that they will employ the right manager, and we will kick on, and you know, Poch is here and he's going to get the best out of our players. And at the moment, it's you've got Chelsea, City and Arsenal, and Liverpool, United, Spurs, Everton could all take that top four at the moment. And then as soon as you get that and you get the attraction of players again, and then you start building it up again. But you can't just say, oh, right, we'll just stay in this stadium, or and think, you know, we're not selling our stadium out, so what's the point of having a 58,000-seat stadium or whatever? Because you have to plan for the future. And if you honestly believe that future is going to grow and you have ambition, then you have to make that stadium big enough.
That's true. That's true. And that's the optimistic way of looking at it. I'm looking at it from a more realistic option. I mean, you can't sell Newcastle at home in the Premier League. You know that.
No, I know. It's not shit at the moment.
Not that Levy's made mistakes, that football's made a mistake. They've taken advantage of football fans for too long. They've just kept putting prices up, saying, yeah, it doesn't matter, they'll keep coming, they'll keep paying in, and now it's not happening. Look at Villa, it's our fault.
Yeah, that's
it's happening
true.
Throughout. It's yeah. The gravy train is over. We're coming back to real football, hopefully. And if people aren't turning up, then the chairman only... I mean, the other thing is actually maybe football fans inside football... inside live games are becoming less important.
Yeah, yeah.
They can get their revenue from America, Asia.
If you look at the Italian game, on BT Sport, which I watch quite often, you know, last night there was about 5,000 people at the San Siro watching Milan get beat. Well, I presume they got beaten by Palermo. They were 2-0 down when I left it.
Mm.
And you think, well, do these people need? Do they need the revenue of bums on seats?
No,
probably not.
Probably not.
Because actually, when you do the maths, we don't contribute that much to the salaries.
Compared to the, you know...
Yeah, compared to revenues, TV revenues.
Syndication of TV football, you know. All right, anyway, look, we've talked on and on this half. We're gonna have Windy now to give us some youth update and make us feel a bit better.
Yeah. Windy, back to drop the fucking knowledge, blah. I see you, I got your back. Windy.
Hi, Windy here, back with the weekly youth update, looking at our young players and players out on loan. Starting off with the loan players, Lewis Holtby was withdrawn in the last minute as Hamburg beat Leverkusen 1-0. Tom Carroll was a 76-minute sub for Swansea, coming on after Jonjo Shelvey sending off to help close out a 0-0 draw against Everton. Ryan Fredericks and Milos Velkovic were both unused subs for Middlesbrough. Grant Hall was an unused sub for Birmingham after their thrashing last week. He was back on the bench. Alex Pritchard was a 66-minute sub for Brentford as they won 2-1 against Derby. Kenny McAvoy came off the bench on 75 minutes as Peterborough lost 2-1 at home to Scunthorpe. Shaq Coulthurst was an 84th-minute sub as Southend won 2-1 at Mansfield Town. Jordan Archer kept a clean sheet as Northampton Town won 2-0 against AFC Wimbledon. And Thomas Lagermel wasn't involved for Bari this week. Moving on to the youth teams, the under-18s won 3-2 at Fulham on Saturday morning, with Anthony Georgiou, Ryan Loft and Armani Daly getting the goals. We went from 1-0 down to 3-1 up before conceding a late goal. Dylan Duncan made his debut coming off the bench, and Marcus Edwards also came off the bench once again. After a superb 1-0 win against Chelsea last week, the under-21s lost 2-1 against Liverpool at St Helens on Friday. Will Miller scored our goal, but Hugo Ekiok was unhappy with the performance, saying, "As good as the standard was against Chelsea, I thought we didn't do the basics right against Liverpool." There were under-21 debuts for 16-year-olds Tom Glover and Ishmael Azawi, and 17-year-old Shayon Harrison. That's it for this week, but if you're interested in more young players, follow me on Twitter at WindyCoys. That's Coys for Come On You Spurs.
Second half of the Fighting Cup podcast. Thank you very much, Windy.
No worries.
Once again, still recording them in your car?
This one wasn't actually, but yeah, normally.
It's the safest option. Do you write stuff down, or do you actually work out what you're going to say?
I make some notes and rattle through it, you know. I like to prepare.
Yeah. It always comes across really well.
Thanks.
Yeah. People like it. Often say it's the best part of the podcast. Which is bollocks, obviously, to be fair. It's absolute nonsense. But, you know, thanks for doing it and that. Okay, the Fighting Cock is sponsored by Calm. 12 men a day commit suicide. It's thought that because we don't talk about our problems, if you're feeling sad or low, talk to someone. It doesn't have to be someone you know. Calm have a helpline open from 5 p.m. until midnight. Numbers 0808 802 5858. They also have a web chat open from 5 p.m. until midnight each day of the week. You can access that at thecalmzone.net. Thecalmzone.net. We've got Asteras and Stoke, our next two games. Obviously, Asteras is a bit of a... It's hard to know what's going to go on. White Hart Lane, now, I thought they were absolutely terrible.
Did you? I didn't think they were that bad.
What, you think we just destroyed them?
We destroyed them, but I don't think they were 5-1 bad. I thought they were actually all right.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you may be right.
We'll beat them away, but I didn't think they were 5-1 bad. I thought we were a little bit lucky to...
We have to win, really, still, don't we?
We're
precariously placed.
Yeah, exactly. And there's three matches to go. We're joint top with Besiktas. If we win this, we go four clear of Asteras. So it's important to win it, basically. We need to pick a strong team and make sure we get the job done. It's going to be very interesting now, leading on from what we were saying earlier, whether Kane plays again or whether Adebayor plays, try and get him back into form. Whether Lamela plays, Eriksen. I mean, those two are both... Lamela's been productive, but his form's been up and down in a kind of... footballing sense. He's not played really well yet.
Seven assists this season as well, which is a high return.
Yeah, he scored obviously a couple of goals as well, which helps. But and he is productive, but it feels like he's still playing in second gear. And when he hits the heights, he's going to be a great player. But it's just getting him to those heights.
It's always strange, isn't it? Because it's 18 months since he was signed at Spurs, and he still doesn't really understand the pace of the Premier League and loses the ball, as we've said many times before. His ability to just not perform in the key areas is just paramount, really, in the way you judge him.
I think it's hard to judge him on last season with his injuries. And stuff like that. I think this season will be his full kind of blooding of being in the Premier League and adjusting. And I think, you know, a lot of people say, and, you know, I notice it as well, that he dallies on the ball and it's a lot quicker, a lot stronger in the Premier League. But, you know, not comparing him to Ronaldo, but when Ronaldo first came with his stepovers and wanting to do too much and show that he has got that ability, we'll soon knock that out of him.
It's just, or get knocked out of him. It's immaturity, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you can't expect him to be anything other than that kind of player, I guess. I think we'll know by March, April, if he's going to cut it, because if he hasn't learned by then that he can't dilly-dally on the ball like he has been, then he'll never learn. I don't know. We'll see.
The thing that strikes me about him is he's quite predictable. I think he's probably quite easy to defend against, because you know he's going to pick up the ball, look to come inside from the right flank, and either get across in or get a shot away. And if he went on the outside and trusted his right foot a bit more, it would keep defenders guessing and open up more space for him. And that's what I'd like to see Pochettino coach into him in the next couple of weeks, couple of months. Just, you know, go on the outside like Townsend does. Trust your right foot, even though it's not your strongest, and try and put a cross in that way and keep defenders guessing.
Lloris has been was sent off. Yeah. A straight red in Europa League. How much is that? Two games?
Or good is it question. Three? I think it might be three.
Really? I always thought it was two in Europe.
No, because no, that would question. Be... It must only be one.
One?
I'm going for one.
We don't know, do we?
Because it's only like it's last a, man. It's, yeah. It's not a violent conduct.
Yeah, you're right, Rob. I think you're right. I think it is.
What the type of sending off is?
Yeah.
They've changed it recently, haven't they?
Okay, so one... Well, it says here that there's no Lloris, essentially, for Asteras. It didn't, I mean, T wrote it, so I'm presuming he knows. So you've got Vorm coming in. I thought that...
Or Kane not playing?
Yeah, Kane in there. Vorm... looks okay against Brighton. It was kind of didn't really have much to do,
but he did start the move for the for one of the goals with a quick throw out, which I liked.
Yep. There was one time when he had to pass the ball left and kicked it out for a corner. I noticed that. I thought, oh, Lloris, how I missed you. But you know, you've got to give him a chance. Goalkeepers need game time, and this is a good opportunity in a competitive game. Asteras are going to offer a little bit more going forward than I'd imagine they did at Wild Lane. So we'll see what he's about, I guess.
And what,
we know he's a good goalkeeper from Swansea.
At Swansea, he's quality keeper, absolute quality.
Especially shot stopping as well.
Mm. Yeah. And similar in terms of proactivity to Lloris, like he's quick off the line and he's just quick generally, which I like. It's such a difference.
I might be throwing this out there completely, but who started? He's Dutch, isn't he?
Yeah.
So who started for Holland in the World Cup? Because Kroll came in. It wasn't Vorm though, was it?
I can't remember the guy's name now.
Oh, it definitely weren't Vorm then. Just in my head, I imagine him playing the World Cup for some reason.
He went to the World Cup, didn't he?
Did he?
He was late back.
Yeah.
No, oh, well, what did he
say? Third choice though.
World Cup goalkeeper. Fine. So we'll see what happens there. We won't do predictions for that. But Stoke is going to be much more of a test. Typically, we've smashed them at home. I remember five. Goal drubbings. I think beaten by five last season. Might be right, or the season before.
Four.
Four,
I think it was.
Oh, it was four. Well, we beat them convincingly.
It was, Boxing Day, and New Year's Eve, or something like that.
Okay,
it's around that time between Christmas and New Year.
So, I mean, a team that we have beaten convincingly, but then they're exactly the type of team that we've struggled with as well. I mean, they're defensively sound. I think they have the sixth best defence in the Premier League, but also the second worst attack in terms of goals scored. But that's the kind of team we've struggled against. They only one chance. They defend with their lives, and we've struggled to break them down. It's about scoring early, I guess.
And Crouch seems to be coming back into a little bit of form for them.
He lost it in the League Cup, didn't he? Completely.
That's true. Yeah, two bad fouls. Moses is playing well. He's sort of playing from left wing. Got his first goal for them the weekend. I know Hughes is sort of changing Stoke a little bit. They're a bit more of a footballing side now. But then I noticed the stat that they're still the number of aerial duels they've won is ridiculously high. Like it's more than double ours.
Really?
So there's obviously a lot of long ball football being played still. But like you say, they're notoriously a difficult game for us in terms of the physicality. And once again, I would hope that Fazio would start because that would negate the threat of Crouch pretty much. I mean, Crouch is slow across the pitch, so is Fazio. Crouch is good in the air, so is Fazio. It just makes sense to play him.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely. What do you think about Bojan as well? Because he was supposed to come in, giving him that extra kind of element. I read a couple of reviews of the game against West Ham. Apparently, it was their best game of the season that they played, and they lost. Don't they? Drew two. They were 2-0 up, weren't they? One of their players, I think. I can't remember if it's Whelan or Shawcross mentioned that if you fire a ball into Bojan, that it's going to stick to him, and he has that quality. But they also said that
isn't he coated in Velcro or sticky tape? That's why.
But when the ball isn't going to him, their own players admitted that he's anonymous, and I don't even know if he'll start. I'd be surprised if he started at Wild Lane, but you kind of look at those kind of players and you think they're good enough. The kind of players that we would have signed. Bojan, certainly about 6-7 years ago, hoping that they'd go on to be well.
Low value punt that if it doesn't work out, it doesn't really matter. Exactly.
Smacks of DeSantos. But, you know, when they do have that technical personnel in their squad that might make a difference, it's still going to be Waters who runs his arse off and he did really well at the weekend, actually, to set up the goal against West Ham.
A workmanlike midfield as well, Glenn Whelan, Stephen Nzonzi.
Whelan's out though, isn't he? He's injured.
Yeah,
he broke his leg, I think.
Charlie Eden, will he play?
Oh god, yeah. You forget about him, didn't you?
Your favourite. Who's he going to injure this time?
I think he'll pick Kerrickson this time.
Or Mason.
Anyone who does him. I don't think Mason will have it. I think out of the two, Mason's going to get well stuck into him because he understands that, and he's obviously a player who understands narratives in the game because he's going to get stuck into Adam. Yeah, hopefully that scumbag doesn't. He's been starting from Stoke.
In and out of the team, I think, and he's been playing sort of as a 10 quite a lot, which is just, I do find that concept bizarre that he's good enough to play as a playmaker in any team. I mean, he used to be a reasonably good footballer, but he did just become a thug. Fat pig.
I see the touchline. Everyone's down in Lucozade and he's just eating sausage rolls. I've seen him do it, man.
Smashing sausage rolls. All right, so let's have some predictions for Stoke. I think 6-1 Spurs. Don't you believe?
Yeah.
Do you believe it?
I always believe.
Always believe. What do you reckon then?
I am going to go for a 1-0.
Oh, fuck off. 6-1.
2-1. I'll go for an optimistic 2-0.
It's not an optimistic. We've got to be smashing these teams. Although I felt the same against Newcastle. Yeah, well, Vardy said there's absolutely no way we're going to lose against Newcastle. He didn't apologise last week either. All right, our next five games after Stoke would be Hull away. Which
3 points.
They've been doing well, to be fair. Partizan at home, which is the 1882 game.
3 points.
3 points. Everton at home.
Three points. Fucking hell, we're doing all right.
Chelsea away.
3 points.
Three points.
And Besiktas away.
It was a loss. A loss that one, unfortunately.
I'll tell you what, I'll take those. I'll take that 100%.
Oh, beating Chelsea away, how good would that be?
That would be amazing. Yeah. Amazing, but...
Can't see it.
Can't see it now. We'll see. You know, you never know. If we do beat Hull away, Partizan at home, Everton at home, which are all winnable games, I think we'd be going into Chelsea very optimistic, given the fact that we're going to beat Stoke, obviously.
6-1.
And Aston Villa away. So that would be, if by our reckoning, five wins on the bounce going into Chelsea.
I can't see anything else. Yeah.
Fantastic. There was quite a lot of talk about Sherwood's analysis and the things he was talking about in terms of adopting youth players into the team. And essentially what he tried to do, the first thing he did was bring Bentaleb into midfield. And a lot of the time, when that happened, there was a lot of laughing and joking about what Sherwood was about. And obviously he came as a development coach. And we didn't really know what his agenda was, and he obviously spoke too much, and that was Sherwood's problem. But I think most people at the time said that if he had just shut up, he would probably still be in charge of Tottenham now. And you saw the implementation of Mason and Kane, and maybe there is something in this developing a philosophy at the club where players are brought into the team. And I talked about it a bit last week.
But AVB tried to bring in Kane to give it some credence. So
what do you think about this idea about investing in youth players? I'm sure you're going to love this, Windy, but investing in youth players, and Spooky last week talks about the excitement there is in the academy of the opportunities that they're going to get when you look at Kane, Rose, I know Rose we bought, but Townsend, Mason, to have four players that are in our potentially in reckoning for starting a Premier League game, it's I don't think there's probably any other club in England that are doing that currently. There may be, but certainly not in the top eight, where you have... I mean, Man United are doing it, but they've been forced to do it in defence with Blackett.
You say top eight, it was lucky we won yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah. We're a top eight club at the moment, that's all I give a shit about. But you think about it, like, and those players, Rose, Mason, Kane and Townsend in the celebration, those are the ones that gave a fuck. Rose was screaming at Vertonghen when that goal went in. Admittedly, it was Rose's fault, but Vertonghen had a parole to play by backing off. But those four players, they're showing the desire and passion that you want. I don't know. What do you think, Windy?
Well, I think we've come unstuck a bit with our transfer policy over the last few windows, and I mean, in hindsight now, at the time, I was so excited about the players we'd signed with the bail money, and I thought, this is going to be great. How can it go wrong? And in hindsight, it was a massive mistake just spending all the money on players that didn't necessarily fit the system, that we didn't necessarily need, and that were kind of the best names we could get without Champions League football.
Mm.
And that's no disrespect to Lamella and Soldado, because I think they are good players. I just don't necessarily think they were right for Spurs, certainly not at the time. They might become right, but for the time I don't think they were. And maybe in hindsight, we should have just sat on the money for a while and promoted from within and had the guts to do that. It's so hard to do that, though. I mean, it takes a brave manager to take players out of the youth system and throw them into the first team.
It's incredibly hard because, I mean, like, you've got... On one side, you will have people that are saying, you know, we've just sold Bale for 86 million and yet Levy's going to pocket the money, as he always does, and sleeps on £50 notes.
Scrooge McDuck's £50 coins.
Exactly. And then, you know, and he's blooding the youth because he wants to keep the money. And, you know, when you've got youth players coming through, it's... like Kane at the moment, he's in real hot form. But then if you start playing him and he goes four or five games without a goal, his confidence is going to just drop, and it can, you know...
Well, it's Townsend, isn't it? Yeah, we've seen exactly the same thing happen with him. The fans get on his back.
It's so hard to get that balance, and you would never, ever be able to have sold Bale for 86 and then said, actually, we're gonna rely on our youth because I think we've got... what it takes to take us to the top four in our youth. That would never have happened.
With Bale, though, that was a rare situation. I don't think this happened before then, and it happened again the following season for Liverpool when they sold Suarez. But to sell a player for 86 million is such a rare thing.
But the thing is, you've got to go back to what I was saying earlier. Where Enoch is effectively an investment company. So I looked upon the guys we bought with the money from Bale. I jokingly said they're these magic beans that Levy buys, and he plants one, and if one turns into a beanstalk, but you could say Bale's a freak. But Berbatov money wasn't bad. Mm. The Modric money wasn't bad.
Yeah.
The Van der Vaart money was okay for what it was. So actually, there's a point where we look at them as footballers, and we look upon them these idols, these fantastic people that are going to do the stuff that's going to make us happy. Levy looks upon it with a different eye. Mm. I'll tell you, you know, he does. He doesn't look upon it like that. He looks upon it as this guy. If I buy this guy Chadley or this guy Lamella or this guy Ericsson, these guys, one of these guys, I've only got to buy one. The analogy I give with why we spent the money was if you watch The Apprentice, and they've always do that thing where they have to set up a market stall, the team in The Apprentice, and if they sell out, Sugar always says, well, the big mistake you made, you didn't go back to the cash and carry, buy more shit to sell.
Yeah, yeah.
You kept the profit. And I think Levy, that's his mindset. I've made that money. What would Mr. Sugar say? I know, let's go back and restock. We'll buy some more.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, well, that would be it. I mean, I think... But something that kind of is a bit contradictory to that is that the fact that the £30 million... Spending £14 million on Luka Modric coming from Croatia, who we knew was... By reputation,
but that was 14 million 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
But you, what? Yeah, but that's not 30 million.
But you wouldn't get anything like Modric coming from.
No.
I just think inflation has caught up with football.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that Lamella set the world alight, and we did sell him for 90 million. You know, if 18 months from now.
Let's hope.
Yeah, I think Jesus, if he does, and we get 90 million for Lamella, we'll look back at this now and go, what idiots we were.
The key for me is I think it has to be about the right blend of players, and not let's not make that mistake again of signing seven players. Let's say, well, hang on, let's find three players.
Nine.
Really
oh,
want.
Sorry.
Let's not sign Kirikesh. Let's promote Conor Ogilvie from the under-21s. Let's not sign Chadley. Let's promote X player from the under-18s. It's those kind of cheap punts that are the investment players that Rob's talking about that I'd rather us not sign. I'd rather us sign three players that the manager identified as first team players that he really wants, and then promote the best players from the youth system alongside them. And the promising thing is we have got some really good youth players coming through. And I heard that had we not lost against Newcastle, I'm reliably informed that Josh Onomar and Connor Ogilvy would have been in the squad for the Brighton game, which would have been their first taste of... Well, I think Onomar's been on the bench once. Ogilvy has travelled once. I'm not sure if he made the bench, but it would have been nice to have seen them get on the pitch and make their debuts. And we've got a few who are kind of knocking on the door now who are quite close to making debuts at some level.
On a slightly different, but it's a connected point. Did anyone see the shot of Baldini celebrating?
Yes.
He looked like a man whose job was going to just about to go, wasn't it?
It's a weird one, that.
You should fuck off.
You don't like him, then?
Nah.
Fuck him. I say, in terms of getting transfers done, he's your man. It's just who chooses the transfer target, yeah. Surely.
I suppose when you've got 86 million in your skyrocket, it don't fucking matter, does it?
How much you want a week? Yeah, right. We'll put 20 grand on that. Time is Paddy G Spurs said, he sent me a question from the forum. He says, I'd rather have a team full of Canes, Masons, Roses, and Carls of either persuasion and Townsend than a lot of the mid ranking overseas dross that we currently seem to have. A bit harsh on the overseas dross. But I get where he's coming from, and we talked a bit about it before. But Windy, who you mentioned Ogilvy and
Josh Onomar.
Are they, I mean, of the current crop of young players, who's more likely or most likely to be the Mason or Kane in a year's time?
Well, they're probably the closest to the first team based on their sort of physical build.
Is it Onomar a big build? I always thought he's a bit leggy and
he's filling out now. I think he's 17 and he's stronger.
He's got
than
that
he was.
Charlie Adams diet, hasn't he?
He's been on the sausage rolls.
For those that don't know, like me, what kind of player is
he's a driving midfield player. He reminds me of Paul Pogba. He's a real driving force in the heart of midfield. He starts deep and will just run through, basically he's slaloming runs through the middle of midfield.
Why does he remind you of Paul Pogba?
Just the style of play, like the dribbling, the balance, capability of passing but also running with the ball.
Okay.
He's very, very promising. We've got Cameron Carter-Vickers, who's the centre-back everyone's been talking about because he's 16, he's already playing in the US under-23 squad, which is... That's almost unheard of, to be playing 7 years
in front of you.
Yeah, above your age group. And he's a very promising player, but being so young, we don't really want to rush him too much. And I think there'll be a point where he'll get a taste of football, but it's probably a couple of years off.
When's he going to start being sent out on loan? And if he's 16,
I was wondering
too
maybe
early
next
for that.
Year, next year, maybe at 17.
A league loan?
Yeah, because Colker went out 17 to Yeovil, so it would make sense to send Carter.
Did he play?
Yeah, and he did quite well there, actually.
Where's that geezer that we used to chant bail at?
Kenny McAvoy.
Yeah, where's he?
He's at Peterborough. I mean, he's a decent player, but he's not going to be a Spurs player.
Same. To be fair, you said we were waxing lyrical about Pritchard, and you said he weren't going to make it at Spurs.
Yeah, he got dropped for Brentford this week, unfortunately. He's on the bench, but he's done well for them. But I think, personally, I've always thought that Pritchard is a little bit below Premier League level. He's probably a Championship player, but he'll be a good Championship player or good lower half Premier League player, I think.
Yeah. And Ogilvy as well.
I'd really rate him. I mean, really versatile defender, can play at left back or centre back, good in the ball, reads the game well, decent physical build for a defender. I mean, that's the problem with Carter Vickers, he's quite short. He's very, very stocky, but he's quite short.
If you put Carter Vickers next to Fazio, where would he reach?
Nipple?
He's that small.
But Fazio is Andre the Giant. On a diet.
Yeah. Has he got a good leap on him then?
He's got the ball. And he's a good marker as well, which is always a good sign. Like, marked Chelsea have got a striker called Dominic Solanke, who was made the first team bench for them recently, and Carter Vickers marked him up the game pretty much in the under-21 match. He was really, really impressive. So the signs are good.
So we've got three players essentially.
Yeah, and then below that we've got some of the most highly rated players in the country. I mean, I've been speaking quite a lot about Marcus Edwards in my youth updates.
I do know that name.
He's the one that Sherwood mentioned in his column recently and got everyone excited because
that's who I heard.
He basically
not from you.
Yeah, I mean Sherwood. So
what
really
kind of player is he?
I've not seen him play other than on YouTube.
How old is he?
15. So he's played 3 games off the bench for under 18s. He's a central midfielder who can play wide as well, but mostly wants to play through the middle. And he's just ridiculously talented for his age. But of course, at that age, you don't know how they're going to progress. So many things can go wrong. So
you think of how you know when you think of footballers, you think 15, 18, you think grown man could handle himself in any situation. But actually, if you look at an 18-year-old and speak to them, you realise how immature they are. 15 is ridiculous. Mm. I mean, that's like a schoolboy. He literally is a schoolboy. Yeah. He's 15 years old.
Hasn't got his GCSEs yet.
Yes, Danny Jesus, he doesn't need to, though, could he?
When I was 15, I got a hoop in my ear and I thought I was a grown man.
Exactly.
I thought I was a fucking don.
I didn't kiss the girl at 15. That's how immature I was. Kiss loads afterwards, obviously. I still do every day. I just walk up to women in the street.
They walk up to you.
Yeah, sorry. Shit, I should have said that, Wendy. Anything else to say about the youth setup?
I think that's covered it off pretty well. The other one,
got no strikers in there, though.
That, we do struggle for strikers. Since Kane's got promoted, I mean, this is actually a problem for the under-21s because Akinduyin is the sort of best striker we've got, and he's a hard worker, but he's not going to make it. So we ended up playing Ceballos as a false nine against Chelsea under-21s, and it didn't really work out. He just doesn't look right to play up front.
What about him? Because you haven't mentioned him, and he's the one we signed from Barcelona. He was released, then we picked him up. And he scored that great goal against... what did he score against? He scored a great finish from range.
In pre-season, was it?
No, it was for the under-21s.
He scored
a brilliant goal.
He scored against Chelsea 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that was it. He scored from range.
Yeah, no, not against Chelsea, sorry. It was against Norwich.
The word range.
No. So, yeah,
he scored from range!
He scored.
You know, Rangy. Rangy McRangerson. Oh, yeah, Rangy.
Rangerson.
No, he scored.
He scored a really good goal against Norwich, but that was basically the only good thing he did in that game.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, it was, yeah. I know the goal you're talking about.
Where was it scored from?
From range, bro. What's his name?
Ceballos.
Oh, that's it.
What's his name?
Christian Ceballos.
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 That's the name of the podcast, Ceballos from Range.
Okay. The Range Rover.
Range Rover. Okay, that's it from the Fighting Gut podcast. We did have a horrible question from Ben Foreman off Facebook, but it was so bad and so horrible that none of us wanted to consider it and therefore just refusing to answer.
What's a foreskin?
That's a pertinent point. Thank you, Rob, for coming down.
Pleasure.
Ricky, once again.
Sorry.
Wendy.
Cheers. Thank you.
And I've been Flav, and this has been the Fighting Cock Podcast.
Podcast Network. Sports Social 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 Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, GEICO can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
Look, my day job as a firefighter is tough, but my night job as a social media manager, my Persian cat Jinxie, that's intense. It's 8 p.m. I've finally gotten home from another 24-hour shift, and I just want to kick back with a cold one, but old Jinxie knocks my beer right off the counter and gives me that look that says no drinking on the clock. But Heineken 00 keeps us both happy. Zero alcohol, but just as refreshing. So I get my drink and I can still work on Jinxie's new line of merch.
Heineken 00. 0.0% alcohol. Now you can. Must be 21 plus to purchase. Enjoy responsibly.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.